Welcome back to yet another edition of First Draft, and it's great to be back, Mel. They thought about replacing me with Daniel one more time. Sorry for missing you on Monday, but no surprise, you and Daniel did tremendous work on that show.
Yeah, be careful. Daniel hitting it out of the park here, man. I tell you. So just be careful, Field. Okay. Yeah. That's all I say. Yeah. I'll give you a little warning.
That's right. Daniel's draft stock is rising like one of those, you know, big tight ends that goes and runs a 4.4 at the combine and puts up 22 reps on the bench and has the good short shuttle. Daniel Dopp is the Kyle Pitts, at least the pre-draft part of Kyle Pitts, because Kyle has yet to find his stride over the past two seasons with the Falcons. But a big debt of gratitude to Daniel and you for holding it down. It's great to be back here on this edition of First Draft, Mel. And we're going to discuss just a bunch of players that you and I feel like we have some thoughts on that we haven't really had the chance to discuss as much as you know better than anybody in the entire industry, Mel. So much of what television wants to discuss is things taking place at the top of the draft. But you remind me often. Yeah. Yep, that's right. Play the hits, baby. And Mel, you know that the draft does not end after the first round. So we're going to dive into some guys who could go in the first round, at least a few, but then a lot of guys who will not hear their name called in round one. But wanted to start the show today, Mel, by just sort of addressing with some measured comments this debate that I think has gained some steam publicly, but I think has been percolating longer within NFL scouting departments about who the best wide receiver in this year's class is. And I want to make something clear at the outset. Ultimately, who is the first wide receiver taken is decided by one team. But that is not to say that the first wide receiver taken in the draft is the majority favorite in scouting circles, because we just don't know exactly how many teams prefer Marvin Harrison Jr. versus Malik Nabers. Let me start here, though, Mel. Obviously, we know how you feel about Marvin Harrison Jr. Do you think it's even a conversation in your eyes between Marvin Harrison Jr. and Malik Nabers?
You know, I think the debate rages on, I think, in terms of, you know, Odunze and Nabers, Field, because that's forgotten here. We act like it's Nabers or Harrison. Odunze and Nabers was kind of a 50-50 split. Now, things change as you get closer to the draft. All the information's in. We get all that. But these three are all very highly regarded. I think you go back, we've had drafts like this, okay? You know, Michael Irvin draft, Timmy Brown draft, Sterling Sharp, you know, Jerry Rice. You know, I think all the receivers were in those drafts, three of them, and each one of those drafts were out saying, you can put them in a hat, pick one, and you're not going to go wrong. I think that's the case with these three, really. Depends what you're looking for. In Malik Nabers' case, he is explosive. He did have a great year. There's no question. He did put it all together this season. Odunze, he is silky smooth. He is reliable. He is consistent. He is the catch radius guy, the contested catch guy. Throw it up, he'll go get it. And then Marvin Harrison Jr., what's not to like? I don't really get, Field. Maybe you can explain it to me. Where's the, I wouldn't say negativity, where's the question coming in on Marvin Harrison Jr. as to why he isn't wide receiver one guaranteed? What am I missing on that?
There is nothing that you're missing now. I think anybody that has a feeling that Malik Nabers is superior to Marvin Harrison is making that case not because of anything that Marvin Harrison doesn't bring to the table, but rather the stuff that Malik Nabers does bring to the table. And I think that's something that I've learned, Mel, in my, you know, relatively short tenure covering the draft and sort of a full-time capacity, is that when you're comparing two players and you say that player X is ahead of player Y, people infer that to mean that you have big slights against player Y. If you ask me what my problem is with Marvin Harrison Jr., if I were to make the Malik Nabers case, I would have zero ability to come up with anything. You want size? He's got size. You want speed? He's got speed. I don't care if he doesn't have a time speed. We know that he is plenty fast. If you want reliable hands, we've got that. You want contested catches? We've got that. Run after catch, body control, you name it. Marvin Harrison Jr. is a total package. But if you're a team that prioritizes run after catch skills, there might be some. There are some, I should say, within the NFL that say, hey, Malik Nabers is the best run after catch wide receiver in this entire draft class, because while he, like Marvin Harrison Jr., has not yet had a timed 40 during this pre-draft process, he was the most explosive player that I studied on tape from this past fall here, Mel. But it seems like both of us are in agreement. While you and I both have Marvin Harrison ranked ahead of Malik Nabers, we understand where the conversation is deriving from surrounding both of those two, and also Roma Dunze, who somehow has become the forgotten man of these three wide receivers.
Yeah, and this is what you get in the draft, Field. As we get closer to late April in the draft, everybody, this quarterback's the best. Somebody says something, we got 32 teams. The only team matters is the team with those picks. So right. We're talking to guys in the league too, and they might say, no, my best running back is this guy. My best off-ball linebacker is this guy. My best safety is this guy. But does it really matter when you're trying to do a mock and your ratings? All our ratings are based on what we believe. So we don't really care what anybody else thinks. Our mock draft is based on what people are telling us. So they're completely different things. I go try to build a consensus. Who was throwing the ball to Marvin Harrison Jr. this past year? It was Kyle McCord. Where's Kyle McCord? He's not a Buckeye anymore, right? Moved on to Syracuse. You go to Jayden Daniels with Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas Jr., who, oh, by the way, Brian Thomas Jr. had one heck of a year as well. Averaged 17 yards a catch with 17 touchdowns. Was throwing the ball to Romo Odunze. Michael Penix Jr. was. They have a couple other receivers going to get drafted, and Jalen McMillan and also Jalen Polk. So I think you have to look at it and put it all in perspective. Marvin Harrison Jr., I don't care about all this stuff. He didn't do this. He didn't do that. Guess what? Adapt, right? Adapt. What did Billy Beane say in Moneyball? Adapt or die, right?
Right. That's right. Yeah.
When Christian McCaffrey didn't play in his bowl game, let's knock him down the board. How'd that would have worked out? Okay. Yeah. So he started that trend. Now, it's a adapt. Guys are going to say, after all this, I played a season, my body's beat up, I'm a little tired. I don't want to participate in all this stuff. I don't want to do a lot of this stuff. Okay, we had players get hurt. Remember Andrew Voorhees last year to guard?
Of course, tore his ACL. Yeah.
I mean, he's going to be starting guard for the Baltimore Ravens this year, but he had to have a medical red shirt. I understand injuries can happen in a pickup basketball game. Like, you can tear an Achilles there. Things can happen in anything. But once the season's over, how you handle those months leading up to the draft, everybody's going to deal with it differently moving forward. Okay.
Totally. And
adapt to it. Adapt to it. We have NIL. We got players in commercials now making a ton of money before they get into the NFL. The whole landscape of everything, college football, the NFL draft, everything has changed dramatically. You got to adapt to it. If you don't, you're going to be left behind.
So, Mel, I will say this. I think we can leave the Malik Nabers versus Marvin Harrison Jr. We think this is like, a 99 and a 98 on this sort of metaphorical grade scale, right? These are two of the best players in the draft. They're two of my four highest rated prospects overall, and you have them both inside, I believe, your top six. So, I mean, we're talking about two elite prospects. The last thing I'll say, though, about Marvin Harrison Jr. in the pre-draft process is hearing from people in the league that have heard Marvin Harrison Jr.'s side of the story, if you will, have described it not that Marvin Harrison Jr. has been disrespectful to the process and that he just sort of turned his nose up to the pre-draft process, but rather that, like, he put a lot of thought into this decision and has actually had a very cogent mindset to explain why he said, what more do you need to see from me? You have my verified measurables in terms of my height and weight and length at the combine, but if you don't think that I'm fast and powerful and explosive, then you're not a very good scout. I think that much we can all agree on. If you need more numbers to support your Marvin Harrison Jr. case, then you are watching the wrong film. Mm-hmm. Let's get to our spotlight stuff here now, though, Mel, because you and I wanted to rip through a bunch of players, and we're going to go offense and then defense. As I said earlier in the show, some of these guys are going to be players that could hear their name in the first round. Some of these guys might hear their names in round six or seven, but let's get to it, Mel. And we're going to kind of go back and forth through a draft of these players. And you're going to start first with a quarterback who won't go in the first round, but could hear his name, I think, called on day two.
It's the Rattler. Spencer Rattler. I talked about him a lot when he was at Oklahoma. We thought, hey, he could be a top guy. He ends up losing out to Caleb Williams, right? Then he goes to South Carolina. And you see evidence when you watch this kid play that he's not Caleb Williams. Spencer Rattler. He has games where he looks like a first-round pick. He has games where he looks like a late-rounder, free-agent-type quarterback. He has some head-scratching throws. Precise passing at times is a little off. But when he's on field, when he's got his best stuff, he is really good. I went and watched games last night. Go to Mississippi State, the Florida game, Vanderbilt. There were games where he was on target. He was lighting it up. He was outstanding. Now, you talk about letting it rip, seeing it, let it rip. When he does that, he's at his best. He's competitive. He's got the quick release. He has a lot of things working. We say, okay, well, there's going to be some question marks when you're a third, fourth round pick, right? Well, Spencer Rattler is not the first round pick that we thought at one point he could be. So for where he's going to go, can you roll the dice on a kid who can spin it, has had moments where he's looked like an early round pick? Coach him up to make that more consistent field. If you can do that in the third, fourth round, maybe you end up with a Kirk Cousins, a Dak Prescott, who were fourth round draft choices. Who knows? Or he's like many other third, fourth round quarterbacks over the last 60 years, because I went back to basically 1960 when I looked at quarterbacks. When I was born, I'm 63 right now. And there was a lot of mistake, a lot of busts. But guys that didn't make it in the third, fourth, fifth round at quarterback. The ones that did are a very small number. So you got to get the right guy. But is it worth a roll of the dice for the rattler? I think it is.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza, better because it has to be.
I agree, Mel. I did like a lot of what he did on tape, obviously, during his time at Oklahoma before Caleb Williams took over. And while the tape this past season was a little bit up and down, I will say this. I like quarterbacks that have been through some adversity. I think that it makes them a little bit more ready for the NFL, because when you're not going to be a first-round pick, the reality is perception the minute you're drafted as a quarterback in the third or fourth round is maybe this guy's destiny is just to be a career backup, which, by the way, can be a valuable and lucrative profession, Mel. But it also is one where it takes some sacrifice. It takes some humility. It takes being able to kind of just roll with the role that has been cast upon you. I think Spencer Rattler is an intriguing late day two, maybe early day three quarterback prospect as well. I will go to a wide receiver who I know we've discussed on this show, Mel, and we talked about him after the combine as well, but he's one of those guys that every time I go back and watch him, I start to like him a little bit more, and perhaps he got lost in the shuffle because it's a deep, deep wide receiver class. But it's Ricky Pearsall from Florida, Mel, and he absolutely blew up the combine, runs low 4.4s, jumps 41 inches on the vertical. He's got good size at 6'1", 190 pounds. And I was thinking about it because going back, everybody remembers the Ricky Pearsall catch against Charlotte from this past season. The one-handed catch, the catch of the season, one of the best catches you'll see maybe ever from Ricky Pearsall. And you think about the kind of player he was, and he kind of did a little bit of everything during his five seasons at college, right? Plays 3 years at Arizona State with Jaden Daniels, spends the last 2 years at Florida. He's had seasons where he pushed nearly 20 yards per catch. He's got some vertical ability. He's also had a season like last year where the yards per catch was down a little bit to 14.8 mil because he was a more powerful sort of explosive route runner in the short to intermediate game. And as we talk about teams, I think starting at the late portion of round one that might need a wide receiver. I'm not talking about a top 15 pick here because Pearsall will be 24 basically the day that the season begins this upcoming regular season. I think Ricky Pearsall has a chance to be a top 35 or so selection, and I have been sort of kicking myself for not having been a bit more aggressive in my grade with him earlier in the process.
I'll tell you what, I wouldn't beat yourself up on that field because there's other receivers. This is a deep group, okay? We don't talk enough about Malachi Corley from Western Kentucky. Yeah. Mike Tannenbaum has Ladd McConkey in his mock draft. So I think there's so many receivers are trying to figure out from maybe 6 through 15, 7 through 15 in that area. But I think when you look at where we are right now with Ricky Pearsall, I remember Herm Edwards saying to me, talked to Herm, he said, "What are you, my boy Pearsall?" Because he had him at Arizona State. He had Jaden Daniels. Herm Edwards recruited these stars to Arizona State. Think about that. Give Herm a lot of credit for figuring out who the talent the guys are and recruiting them and getting them there and getting their career going. And Pearsall had it going at Arizona State before he went to Florida. I'm with you on Ricky Pearsall. He screams second-round draft choice. And he screams a guy who's going to play in the NFL and help a team for a while. So I'm with you on Pearsall. I'm going to go in the, I'm going to try to keep it in the trenches moving forward because we don't talk enough about the guards. Guards are hard to separate.
Yeah, they are.
You know, there's some guys that we'll get to, but I'm going to go to Christian Haynes from Connecticut.
Love it. Yeah.
Christian Haynes is a guy, 49 straight starts. I mean, you talk about experienced guy for Connecticut, for UConn. You think about where we are right now with Haynes athletically. You think about a guy who, to me, I love a little bit of a wrestling background with an offensive lineman. You see that? You like it? You know, I'm big into the arm length. His arm length is fine. Okay. Yep. I like short arm linemen. That's important. The athletic kid, combo blocks, doing some things there. Yeah, there's some things he needs to work on. But to me, Christian Haynes, I'm talking him in that third, fourth round area, day two, day three, early day three. Christian Haynes, if he gets lost in the shuffle in these guards, and there's a lot of them that are between that third and eighth spot on the guard board, I think Christian Haynes, to me, when you get into that, like I said, the end of day two, Friday night, before you get to Saturday morning and day three starts, that's when I think Christian Haynes is going to be in the discussion.
No, I had him in the top 50 in my first top 50 rollout. So I might be even more optimistic. Maybe I'm a touch too optimistic on Christian Haynes. And you forgot the fact that he's from Maryland, Mel. Where did that factor
in? Maryland. Evaluate? Exactly.
You're not covering that yet.
I'm with you.
I mean, that's an important thing. But you mentioned the wrestling background, plays with great leverage as well. Physical player. Like, he's got some nasty to him. Like, maybe to the point, like, there might be times where, like, that whistle blows and he's still thinking about it, right? He's got an edge to him, which I really like amongst my interior offensive linemen because you're not going to win every rep. So you got to have a determination to bounce back on the next play. And it's kind of like some mental warfare in there, right? You're going up against these guys who want nothing more than to squash you. I thought the Christian Haynes sort of mental makeup as a guard really stood out as well. But I love guard talk. So why not keep it going, Mel, with yet another one who's coming back from an injury during his career was an outstanding player.
Zach Zinter, boy, a technician. He's got a little mean nasty in him. He's more just a phone booth guy. To me, I think when you look at the Penn State game, it was the game to me that really jumped out. You talk about a dominant run blocker, solid, consistent, but effective blocks in space for me. And then, of course, it goes to the Ohio State game, game of the year, and all of a sudden you have the leg injury, tibia, fibula, clean break, though. So I just checked on him. Looks like he's going to be ready to go. He'll be certainly ready for the start of the season, ready for training camp. It's not going to be an issue with Zach Center. You know, tough net, 42 career starts at left guard. I talked about veteran experience, big, good size, good length for his size. To me, Zach Zinter is a guy you talk about. I said Pearsall screams second round. Zinter screams second round pre-injury. Does he get to the third round field? I don't think so. But if he does, he's a plug and play starter for a long time in the NFL. Zach Zinter to me, when you look at the guard spot, if you think, take Troy, do it for me, Field. How do you pronounce it now?
Troy Fa'utanu.
Fa'utanu.
There we go, Mel. Yeah.
Troy Fa'utanu, I got love him. Is he tackle, guard? So if you want to put him as the number one guard, who's the number two guard, Field? Number two guard for me is still Zach Zinter. Okay. And we talked about Jonathan Brooks running back Texas with the ACL, where I still have his number one running back. I'm not moving Zinter off the number two guard. If you put Fa'utanu at the at a tackle spot, he's your number one pure guard. So Zach Zinter to me, love the kid, love the experience, love his the way he is as a technician, love his mindset. The injury occurred, but guess what? He's going to be fine. So for Zach Zinter, you're back almost to where you were pre-injury in that second round discussion.
All right. So you gave I offered up the Christian Haynes is from Maryland, of course, and Zach Zinter, a Massachusetts kid now. So, you know, I got to have some extra love for Zach Zinter, who played at one of the high schools. It was a rival of mine. Safe to say that Zach was a slightly better prospect coming out of high school than I was as a negative 10 star recruit to go play Division III football instead. Let's keep things rolling here on the offensive line conversation, Mel, and a player that I think could go higher than maybe the estimates are right now for a few reasons, including positional versatility and also off the charts athleticism. That's Tanner Bordellini, Wisconsin interior offensive lineman. He was a center this past season. And Mel, as you know, this was not your father's Wisconsin Badgers, right? They have this new offensive system that was as anti-Wisconsin as you could possibly imagine on the football front, right? For years, they have been just a mauling mash unit power running game. And this year they look like well, the rest of college football, right? Spread things out, play every snap from shotgun. And Tanner Bordellini had a big responsibility to adjust and play a much different style. I will say this. I'll start by saying that while he was a center, I could see him playing guard for a couple of reasons, including some inconsistent shotgun snapping. But, Mel, he was like, get his hands on somebody every play prototype. That stood out watching him. And then he goes to the combine, Mel, and has maybe the most impressive workout for any interior offensive lineman in the entire exercise. And when you're wondering about, can a guy redirect? Can a guy handle cross-face rushers? Those kind of things are traits that NFL teams will rely upon drills like the short shuttle or the three cone to kind of gauge and estimate. So this might be a little rich, Mel. Maybe I'm in over my skis on a couple of these interior offensive linemen. But if you told me he snuck into late round two, early round three for Tanner Bordellini, also would not surprise me.
That would be a little high for me, Field, just a little high. I'd have more of a fourth, fifth round grade on him. So based on your projections, he would go earlier than I'm looking at him. I think a backup can start for some teams. I think I'd like to see a little longer arms. To me, I'm big into arm length, you know, that Field. But for Tanner Bordellini, I'm with, he did improve his draft position in the months leading up to the draft to the point where third round wouldn't discount that as a possibility, especially when you talk about a guy who did put on a show in terms of athletic ability.
He did. He really did. And I'll go for one more offensive guy, Mel, before we turn our attention to the defensive side of the ball. Well, we could probably talk guards and centers all day. I'm sure some people want to hear about players that catch the football and make a lot of money in the process of doing that. And we've talked about him before, Mel, on the show. But just a reminder, Tanner McLaughlin, Arizona tight end, who was a college wide receiver at Southern Utah prior to arriving at Arizona, had just two seasons with the Arizona Wildcats, and yet they still found a way to be – he still found a way, excuse me, to become the number one ever tight end catcher in terms of total receiving – total receptions during his Arizona career. I really butchered that entire stat right there, Mel. But the point was he had more catches than Gronk, who previously had the most catches – for an Arizona tight end ever, which was a stat that certainly blew my mind, but it certainly shows up when you watch his athleticism. This guy is one of the better athletes amongst all the tight ends in this draft class, and it's not a deep draft class. As we know, Brock Bowers is going to be the first tight end taken, Mel, but I think the door is wide open for several different players to be that second tight end taken. And Tanner McLaughlin might not end up being tight end two, Mel, but it, to me, would be a terrific mid-round value for somebody looking to beef up that tight end spot.
Yeah, Jatavion Sanders, Texas, is probably in that mix, but I'm with you after that. I like Mason Plyne at Furman. I think he's a kid that has a chance to be a really good player. I think there's some other guys that are kind of lost in the shuffle there, but Plyne at Furman, I think, is a guy that didn't get invited to the combine, but has a chance to be a good fifth, sixth round pick if he gets down that far. McLaughlin, you think about Arizona Field. Jed Fish is now at Washington, but the year they had was keyed by one thing. Noah Fifita, when he stepped in at quarterback, young quarterback, Jaden Delora, he was there. He had some moments, but injured. You think about Noah Fifita made that team what they were. He got the ball to Cowing, McLaughlin. He had Wiley run it. Jordan Morgan coming back at left tackle. They had all these players going to be in the NFL, but Noah Fifita, the young quarterback for Arizona, and Jed Fish made it happen. So I'm with you on that in terms of McLaughlin. Where could he go? He's another guy in that third, fourth round mix. When you talk about tight ends, there is a drop off their field. So good call there. Kids athletic. I've seen him hurdle guys. I mean, he does some things on the football field. You say he's that kind of that combo guy. It's not Brock Bowers, but he's going to give you an awful lot of ability at that spot.
Yeah, just to throw some names into the hat for that second tight end taken after Brock Bowers. You mentioned Jatavion Sanders from Texas, Jared Wiley from TCU, who was, by the way, a former Texas Longhorn for three seasons before transferring. I just mentioned Tanner McLaughlin. We've talked about Tip Ryman from Illinois. Maybe not tight end two, but guys that are going to be considered for, you know, one of those three to four first tight ends off the board. Theo Johnson from Penn State, a name to know as well. Had a terrific combine. And then if you think Ben Sinnott from Kansas State is more of a tight end than an H-back, he certainly could be in that mix as well. I really get the sense, and as I talk to more and more people, Mel, it feels like a couple of the positions where it's really like, what are you looking for? Like, what preference do you have? What flavor of tight end are you looking for? Tight end and safety are the two positions where the league seems to value players very differently, with the obvious exception to tight end spot for Brock Bowers, so the clear-cut number one. So that's a lot of offensive guys right now, Mel. Let's go to the defensive side. Before we get to the defensive guys, Let's do some late round guys. And I'll give
I
you
love
three
the late round gems field. Yeah. Yep.
Let me give you three. And I don't know how late these guys are, Mel, because I like them so much that I keep feeling like, hey, maybe these guys could slide up the board. But let's start here with Luke McCaffrey. Rice wide receiver. You could win a nickel at your bar trivia night down there in Maryland, Mel, with this stat. Luke McCaffrey tied Rome Odunze for the most contested catches in all of FBS last season. Each of them had 24. You would not expect that from a kid who's been playing the position for 2 seasons. That's right, 2 seasons for Luke McCaffrey playing wide receiver at Rice. He began his career as a quarterback in Arizona. Yes, he is the younger brother of Christian McCaffrey, and you can imagine the athletic pedigree in that entire family. His parents, Ed and Lisa, are world-class athletes in their own right, or at least were during their athletic days. The apple does not fall far from the tree here for Luke McCaffrey. And Mel, for a guy that's still kind of learning the position, impressed me with not just the contested catch stuff, the toughness certainly showed up. The sort of understanding of how to become a better route runner has certainly shown up. The hands in general showed up to me. It's still a work in progress, right? Like, it's still going to look like a guy who is green at the wide receiver position, but for a heck of an athlete, for a guy that I think maybe it takes him a year to get there, but a day three pick would be exactly the kind of value I'd be targeting in Luke McCaffrey.
You get your natural catching the football, and it's amazing. Yeah. We surrender a quarterback, wide receiver. We've seen that change before happen a lot over the years, 60s, 70s, even 80s, we saw that. And for Luke McCaffrey, the bloodlines, the natural ability that you've seen, the fact that he stepped up when he had to, and there was pressure on him. Obviously, when you have that McCaffrey name, all eyes are on you, so he's dealt with that and the expectations, changed positions, and now developed into a guy that is going to – we're going to be talking about him in Detroit on day three. There's no question about that.
Yeah. Can't wait to see him here. This one I think you'd be proud of. Maybe the next two you'd be proud of here, Mel, because I know you love your deep cuts here. Kalen Robinson, running back return specialist from Texas, who barely saw the football. Now, in his defense, they had Jonathan Brooks at running back, and they had Eddie Mitchell, and they had Xavier Worthy, and they had Jordan Whittington, and they had Jatavion Sanders in the passing game. There are a lot of mouths to feed. And just a year ago, of course, they had two running backs taken in the first four rounds, Roschon Johnson after, of course, Bijan goes eighth overall. So there's been a lot of guys ahead of Kalen Robinson. But if you're looking for microwavable offense, big plays, Kalen Robinson, both as a running back and a receiver, and on top of that, as a return man, Mel, you could have me convinced he could end up being an incredible late-round value. What do you think?
Hey, when you're as fast as he is and you have that versatility field and you can help a team in a way other than just being a guy that has to be out there, a special teams return game. Yeah, you can't teach your coach what he brings in terms of that ability to change a game with the ball in his hands. He'll find a way on the field. They'll find a way to get him the football on the offensive side. But certainly now you're talking about in the late rounds when you get a kid in who has that is the word dangerous when he's on the field in any capacity field. I'm with you on that.
All right. Fear factor player on day three. And this guy, not a fear factor player because he plays left tackle, Mel, maybe a guard at the NFL level, but I don't know how many Louisiana Raging Cajun players that don't really play much earlier in their career end up being drafted in the NFL. But I think Nate Thomas, big Nathan Thomas, left tackle most recently, but could be a guard at the next level, has me intrigued. Big, physical, nasty player. And when I'm on day three, Mel, and I'm trying to decide the positions that I want to take a swing at, because the truth of day three in the NFL draft is, while we are looking for the diamonds in the rough, we also acknowledge that it's not like a lock for a sixth or seventh round pick to even make his own team. As a result of that, if I'm an NFL team, I'm taking swings at high value positions, right? Offensive linemen, which, as we know, are now amongst the highest paid players in the entire NFL. Nathan Thomas has me intrigued.
You said the word, and I agree with you. Nasty. You better be. When you're coming from college to the NFL, Louisiana Lafayette, to the NFL, you better have that. And I've talked to some coaches, I've talked to personnel people, and that's the first thing they say is that. That's why I like Zach Zinter. That's kind of the common denominator with a lot of players we like in the draft. You better have that unless you're just a superior athlete, but you better have some of that in you. I think offensive line coaches certainly want that ability. You talk about a late round pick, which is what he is. That's a key attribute that you better have. And he does. So I'm with you. I think that's a good call. And some guys on day three are going to be fun to see when they come off the board.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Yeah, one last thought on day three, guys, especially guys that we project on like the sixth or seventh round level, Mel, is that I feel like it's important that they just have a signature trait in general, right? Like, I don't think that many guys that just do like a lot of things pretty well as sixth or seventh round picks end up becoming megastars. I think instead it's the guys who like, it's the super fast wide receiver or running back. It's the physical, powerful offensive tackle. It's whatever it might be. It's the linebacker, off-ball linebacker who has a knack for blitzing or something like that that end up becoming useful players at the NFL level. Let's go to the defensive side of the ball here, Mel, and you get to rip through a bunch of players. But let's start with the name that I know you and I are going to be practicing in the mirror the night before the draft, maybe the night before day two, which is when I think he'll end up being drafted. But we're going to get it right come draft day. Tell me about a Clemson defensive tackle that you like.
Rook Arororo. Okay.
There we
go. And I tell you, Rook is a guy that I like for a lot of reasons. I like guys who are late developers, came from Nigeria at age 9, right? He didn't play a lot of football until his junior year in high school. He played basketball at the prep ranks. Yeah. I believe it was in Michigan. You think That's about right. Where we are now in terms of Rook, the production, 4 sacks both years, back-to-back, 2022, 2023, 8 tackles for loss in that area. I think when you look at the production, the scheme versatility, that will allow him, I think, to be a guy, turns out to be a better pro than collegiate. He's just touching the surface for what he can be. He is a gifted athlete. His 10-yard time was better than Byron Murphy II. Okay. He has the ability, I think, to translate that skill set with the want to. And you better have the want to and the desire. And he has limited background in football. And he is still a guy that I'm sure Dabo wishes he had him another year. That's the kind of guy you say, can I just have this guy? And I know at Washington, they wish they had Roger Rosengarten another. There's a lot of guys we can say, I wish I had him another year. Rook Arororo is one of those guys. So from a talent standpoint, he has it. From a toughness standpoint, yeah. Scheme versatility, he has it. Yeah, I like the arm length for a guy his size. You know, you talk about, we're listening to 6'4", 294 at the combine. He's smart. He wants to be great. He will work. I think, Field, and I'll talk to people in the league about Rook, I think he goes late second, at worst early third.
You got all right. So yeah, I just held up my hand with two fingers, which apparently when you do that on Zoom, it creates a bubble sensation. Oh. I don't know what that is.
I was going to say, because I think you're right. Celebrate, Field. He got it right. I think late second, and I like the kid. I think late second, early third, day two, Rook comes off the board. Because guess what? We thought defensive tackle was going to be loaded with all these great players. It didn't materialize like we had hoped. A lot of these guys, they were either Mason Smith coming off the injury, Makai Wingo got a little banged up. It didn't work out with the kid at Miami. There's a lot of different things going on that we thought certain guys would be. Taylor at Miami would be great. Leonard Taylor, right? Didn't happen. Yeah. So again, it just didn't work out. Some of the guys, Riley Mills went back to Notre Dame, right? Howard Crossford went back to Notre Dame. So again, defensive tackle is looking for somebody. I still like Tavondre Sweat. I understand the Byron Murphy II love. I get it. But I'm gonna roll with Tavondre Sweat for a long time. He is what he is. Now, in the secondary field at the cornerback spot.
Let's hear it.
Length and recovery speed. And ball skills. Elijah Jones from Boston College has all three. And I look at him, 6'1" and a half, 185, with long arms, ran 4.44. I look at vertical, that explosiveness, 42 and a half vertical. Are you kidding me? 10-11 broad. Willing tackler, you better be that, right? You think about 5 interceptions, 8 pass breakups in 2023, like the ball skills, like some of the matchups when he was challenged a little bit against some good receivers. To me, Elijah Jones. third, fourth round. Another guy. I'm always looking for guys in that third to fifth round area. I think I'm going more third round for him because you can't overlook the speed, the athleticism, and the ball production that he had in terms of the INTs and the pass breakups. Elijah Jones, to me, the awareness, the fact that you're long and you're athletic, I like the kid field. So I'm going to go with him. Then a safety.
Yeah. Can I say one thing on Elijah Jones, Mel?
What's that?
I have two quick things on Elijah.
Right ahead.
First of all, track background shows up, right? Yep. He can fly. Second of all, I know that you don't – I think Matt Miller is the only person here that does more than a three-round mock draft. But do we go ahead and tell Elijah Jones to start looking for real estate in Green Bay, Wisconsin, now that Jeff Hapley, his former head coach, is the defensive coordinator there, right? I mean, that feels like a Packers, you know, late third, early fourth round pick to me. I digress. Let's talk safeties.
Great call on that one. Let's see if he does end up with the Packers. Let's see how many Wolverines end up with the Chargers. All that connection. It's like, familiarity reigns supreme, right? So you're right about that 1,000% field. I think when you look at Tyler Newbin from Minnesota, a kid who has the experience, seems like he's been there. We said that about Brock Purdy at Iowa State. Seems like Tyler Newbin's been at Minnesota forever, right? Yeah. But what's he been doing? He's been intercepting a lot of passes, right? I have the number at field. I got here 12 interceptions the last 3 years, 13 in his career. Okay, the numbers were 3, 4, and then 5 the last 3 years in terms of interceptions. His hands, he looks like a receiver when he's going after the football. He's got great hands.
He does.
He's got long arms, big, great hands. He's 6'1½", 200 pounds. Diagnoses quickly. Instincts downhill, he'll make the big hit. But his ability to just his awareness, his instincts and coverage. And when he gets a chance, what frustrates me, Field, and I hate it. It's what I hate is when defensive backs have a chance to pick off a pass and they drop the ball. Because that to me, that's a turnover. And in the NFL, you don't get a gazillion possessions like they do in college. Okay. You have limited possessions in the NFL. If you could steal a possession with a pick, now I'm talking about a dynamic pick, not just a pick, a dynamic pick. That's what Tyler Newbin will do. And I think to me, when we're looking for the best safety, I think it's Cooper DeJean. If you want to make him a safety, he's the number one safety. Newbin to me with Cam Kinchin slipping back, right? Who do you have? I have Newbin as the best safety right now. Second round grade field, where do you have him?
Yeah, I have Cole Bishop as my number one safety right now.
Okay.
University of Utah, who absolutely flew at the combine, and he ran a 4.42, I believe, and at that size with, you know, one of the tricks of evaluating players in college, Mel, is that what they're asked to do in college may not be what they're asked to do in the pros. Mm-hmm. So when you watch some of the, especially the early season stuff for Cole Bishop, it's like a lot of blitzing. The guy's playing in the box a bunch. But when you run 4.42 and you can cover, that to me says you can play in the deep middle portion of the field. You can be a free safety if asked to do exactly that. So Cole Bishop has been my number one safety. I am having a hard time, though, deciding between even Bishop to a degree and the first four safeties in this year's draft class. Here are my top four, Mel, with a fifth who's kind of lurking. Cole Bishop, Tyler Newbin, Jaden Hicks, Cam Kinchins, and the fifth kind of lurking is Javon Bullard from University of Georgia.
Yeah, Bullard's interesting. You know, he's the one actually hit Marvin Harrison Jr. Remember in that game where Ohio State's winning that football game? That's where I get the Marvin Harrison again. I want to bring up Marvin Harrison.
I know.
I can't get over Mr. Tannenbaum saying ninth overall. Are you kidding
amazing
me?
Yeah.
I mean, in that game, in the end zone, remember the end of the third quarter?
Of course, change everything.
Game was I changed the whole thing. Georgia doesn't want to get past that game. Ohio State wins that game. Okay. Remember, Jameson Williams got hurt previous year against Georgia, right? That changed that whole game. This was the game. Marvin Harrison Jr. finishes that game in the fourth quarter after getting hurt at the end of the third, but Bullard hit him. And Bullard just shows up for me. I'll tell you, guy, I like Kamari Lassiter. Kamari Lassiter is just a foot. I understand a 4.5 and change, 40, whatever. He didn't run 4.6, by the way. He ran 4.51. That 4.6 was wrong. Okay. It's a bad 4, a bad number. It wasn't the number. It was 4.51, 4.53. And there, I don't even care. That 40 time, he plays faster. He's in the hip pocket of that receiver. He's feisty. Kamari Lassiter is going, I think, no worse than the second, early third. But as far as a Bullard and Tyke Smith's going to play, the West Virginia, he's going to be another guy that I can mention as a day three guy that I think has a chance to be a pretty good football player.
All right, so one player that I wanted to address within the safeties, because this was the player that brought this all up, is Tyler Newbin.
Yep.
He did not have a time during the combine. No 40 time from him. That, to me, will dictate what, and not specifically his 40 time. but how teams view his ability to turn and run. Mm-hmm. Because you talked about it. Going forward, like diagnosing plays in front of him, making the best of the opportunities when interceptions presented themselves was a great strength of Tyler Newbin's. I mean, a highlight reel in terms of like spectacular catches for interceptions. I think it'll be, how do teams value him as a deep portion of the field safety when he has to open his hips and gain depth and run and potentially chase down some of these lightning fast receivers in the NFL. That to me will be sort of like the straw that stirs the drink of his draft value. It will be the thing that determines, is he a top 50 player overall? Is he more like a 75th best player overall? So I have been having a hard time, as I said earlier, in terms of deciding 1, 2, 3, 4. I will say this, though. They're all going to be clustered close in the overall ranks, regardless of how they shape up 1, 2, 3, 4 specifically within that safety.
Now, safety is going to go day 3. It's going to be interesting. I think he's going to make a team. He's going to, is Malik Mustafa at Wake Forest. I think he ends up as a day 3 guy, 5th, 6th, 7th rounder that plays in the NFL and helps the football team in that defensive secondary.
I get a little bit guilty sometimes of talking about players and saying, you know, the floor for this guy is at least he can be a special teamer. But I think Malik Mustafa, who maybe a little undersized, but he'll bring it now, Mel. That guy, he packs a punch for a smaller safety.
He's built for the 80s field. The way he plays, he's a 70s, 80s style. He will lay you out, okay? He's 70s, 80s, back in the day when you get penalties when you hit a guy hard. That's all worries me. You hit a guy hard in the NFL now, they don't even care if it's a clean hit. Hit him hard, throw the flag. Hit him too hard. Right. I think there should be a penalty for too hard a hit penalty.
I think we already have that.
I know. It's like too hard a hit penalties. Yeah. We have. I worry about that. But hey, that kind of guy can play on my team any day of the week.
I'm with you on that. Last one here, Mel. And I wanted to flag this player, not because people that listen to this show don't already have a base of knowledge on him. And this guy's going to the first round. But I just wanted to bring it back up, Mel, because, you know, there are times where you can overthink things with this pre-draft process. And then sometimes you got to say to yourself, if you've got a bendy edge rusher who can absolutely fly off the football, that's going to go high in the NFL draft. And that's Chop Robinson from Penn State, Mel. And I understand the sack production is incredibly modest. I've noted just 4 sacks last year. 2 of those came in the game against UMass. So 2 against the rest of the schedule. That's not going to scare anybody in terms of overall production, right? Leatu Latu has like 2.5 sacks, it feels like, for UCLA every single week. And yet, if I know the NFL, like I think I know the NFL, Mel, I believe that Chop Robinson is going to go off the board earlier than maybe some people have him ranked in their overall composite ranks because of the fact that that incredible first step, and it showed up in his 40 time at the combine. He's a little shorter than some people were anticipating, but with that kind of acceleration and first step quickness, I just think that Chop Robinson might end up being the 2nd pass rusher taken in this year's class. So ahead of Jared Verse and ahead of Leatu Latu, he is number 18 on my overall big board right now. Too high in your mind?
No, I think Chop's going to be interesting. I think Mike Tannenbaum chopped out of the first round Chop Robinson. You know, I don't remember. I didn't hear him in Mike Tannenbaum's first, but Chop, I wish his arms were a little longer. You know, overall, to me, it gets back to Odafe Oweh. No sacks, late first round. Chop Robinson, I think, is a guy with the way he handles a run, sealing things outside against the run. And also, and I'm going to get to it when I go a little off script here. That's the one thing we overlook and underestimate is you got to play the run in the NFL. You got to be able to hold up. And I think he will. Chop will, and he will hustle. Had the injury. His numbers would have been a game and a half. He was out. He would have probably had a couple more. But that's the nature of the Penn State defense. Chop Robinson, I tried to find a spot in Mach 3.0, middle of the first for him field. I just couldn't find it. Because there's needs of other needs and what we're solidified in free agency. Every team needs multiple pass rushers. So maybe a team that we don't think will take him will. But you get him in the 20s is where you feel from a mock draft standpoint more comfortable. But I'm with you. Maybe somebody takes him a little earlier than that. Maybe somewhere around at a 15 to 20 range.
I have not finalized it because it does not run for 8 days. But there's a chance based off of my initial sort of scribbling down of where I think players will go in my mock 2.0, which is a 2-round mock, by the way, Mel. That Chop Robinson will find his way inside the top 20. That's a teaser right there, folks. But it's time now for us to go off script. Now, my favorite part of the show when we do it, the floor is yours. Whatever is on your mind, let it rip.
I've been watching a lot of players field, and I feel like on McAfee, I'm going to be Mad Mel today. That guy's amazing, by the way. Mad Mel, I don't know who you are, but you do a great job. I'm really entertained by that. I don't know where he got it, but this guy's good field. Frank Caliendo, the guy does Mad Mel. I don't know, but I'm going to – yeah, when you look at guys that are, I don't know what to do, and I get a little frustrated. What do you do with Sione Vaki? You love Cole Bishop, What do you do with Sione? Sione Vaki is a – safety who had a lot of production at safety. I mean, he will come up and bang you, right? Is he a running back, though? He was in a Wildcat, okay? And he was running the football. Super strong. He squats 520, benches over 400.
Is he really?
39 and a half vertical. He ran 4.62. I don't care. He plays faster. 5'11 and a half, 210. He averaged 7.5 a carry. He had 11 catches. Is he a running back? Special teams? Safety? Sione Vaki from Utah. What do you think, Field? Fifth round? Would you take him?
I was going to say fifth, sixth round, Mel. And I think the question will be, does the team have a plan when they draft him? Or is the plan to figure out what he's going to be at a later date, right? Because I think we've seen something, Mel, in recent drafts that has adapted teams' mindset. It's when we have these players that we say, like, oh, my gosh, this guy can do so many different things. As the most recent, or at least the most notable recent example is Isaiah Simmons, right? It was, this guy can be a safety, he can be a linebacker, he can rush the passer, you name it, he can do it, right? He can be a slot corner. And instead, at least during his time in Arizona, it was like he never did one thing great enough to find a permanent home there, which is why he was traded to the Giants last offseason. So I feel like teams in some ways are embracing versatility because you need it, right? You need an interior offensive lineman who can play guard and center as an example. But when you have a player who's got such a unique versatility skill set, like a safety or a running back, which are two very different things, I'm not so sure it's as much of a value add as it would have been a few years ago. But I was thinking, middle of day three for Sione Vaki, because I just used this a little while ago on Malik Mustafa. But the absolute worst thing you have in Sione Vaki is a great special teams player who, with that new NFL kickoff rule, it feels like core special teamers, Mel, are going to be valued a little bit more once again.
Yeah, that's the thing. You have so much versatility, but what are you going to define as your role? But when you're talking late rounds, we're not talking early rounds. We're talking about a late round guy who is a tough kid. He's granite. Okay, he is powerhouse boy. You try to tackle this guy in space, he's got speed. I mean, when he saw him out racing 4.62, he played faster than me when he had the ball in his hands. Liked him. I'm going to go to a couple of guards, and you help me with my pronunciations, Phil, because I'm not good at that. Okay. Saul Taulalau. Okay.
His teammate. Yeah.
Teammate at Utah. Okay. Strong kid. Think about tackle, shorter arms you prefer. Move him to guard. Think about a guard in the NFL. Like the way he plays as a day three pick. You're talking about the fourth, fifth round area. I think he comes off the board. A guy who, to me, why can't you be a little more consistent? And I see it in games is Laydon Robinson from Texas A&M. I see it. And then if other games, we see highly rated, you see low rated. You see no consistency necessarily week to week. Laydon Robinson, though, flashes as a guard. He flashes third, fourth round ability, but he's probably going to be a day three pick. It's going to be interesting to see where he comes off the board. If you can coach him up and maintain that level of consistency, there's something to work with there. I'm going to go to a kid who we talk about in the top 10 is Dallas Turner. Is Dallas Turner got a lot of boom? Is there any little bust factor? And the thing is, you got to play the run a little bit better. He's got to improve against the run, okay? And that's the one area of concern. Sealing the edge, being able to handle your run responsibilities in the NFL is huge. Will Dallas Turner be able to pick up the pace in that area? The second thing is secondary counter move as a pass rusher. Develop that. So I think when I'm watching Dallas Turner, loved the talent, okay? He's relentless when he's getting after the quarterback. He, to me, got better because he had a little bit of a down year, but wasn't as productive in 2022 as he was even in 2021. Put it all together this year. He's supremely gifted, tested off the charts. I love the length. He's got bend.
Yeah.
Can you coach him to be the player? He has to be a complete player because being one-dimensional, you're talking about the eighth pick to Atlanta. You can't be a one-dimensional guy. I get it. Do we know for a fact he's a 10-plus sack a year guy? We don't know that right now in the NFL. We're projecting based on talent. So when I say a little boom, bust, there's a little bit of there. I like Dallas Turner. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going to go crazy. But there is a little concern about when you watch Dallas Turner. Okay. A little concern about, will he be as great as we think he can be? Jared Verse is the other guy that I think is intriguing because you love the power. And I love that quick first step. I love the everything. He plays hard. Is that little stiffness, tightness in the hips coming around the corner? Is that going to affect him from being a 10 plus sack a year guy to a little less than that? Is there a little concern there? So for both Dallas Turner and Jared Verse, there's that little concern. Turner's going to go higher, though. I think Verse could go as high as 9 to 15. But with pass rushers field, hey, there's a little concern there as to whether they will. And I'm always looking for that 10-plus sack a year guy, 8-plus sack a year guy. Can we get to that point with those guys? We'll have to wait and see on that. Now, in terms of overall, there's a tackle out there who I can't figure out. And I think I got his name. It's Kingsley Suamataia.
From
BYU. I see times where I think coach him up. An offensive line coach is going to want him as a late one, early two. I see some areas if he doesn't improve, it's going to be tough for him moving forward. You know, in the NFL against the best pass rushers in the world. Field, help me. I that's what I thought, Mars. I don't know. I can't put a final grade on Kingsley Suamataia. Help me out, Field. Tell me what you think and where do you define him in terms of his grade and where he'll go in the draft.
An important note on this, Mel, is I believe the Suamataia family has a podcast of their own, and they shared a clip from the last time we were discussing him on this show, and they were thankful that we did get his name correctly. So if the Suamataia family is once again watching the show, thank you for watching. We've enjoyed watching Kingsley play, a player who has all sorts of upside. This is the question that I think will define Kingsley Suamataia, Mel, is we live in the era now where we don't have patience for these draft picks anymore, right? Because we don't have patience for GMs or head coaches, right?
I mean, we still have patience anymore for anything, Phil.
For anything. That's right, Mel. In general, Kingsley Suamataia is absolutely incredibly gifted. He is big. He's physical. He's got nimble feet. He is so powerful. When he gets his hands on defenders, Mel, they have no chance. You might as well just wave the white flag. This is a player who's still young, by the way. He played a year at Oregon and then transferred down to BYU, closer to home. He has all the physical tools. It might not be a totally, fully refined package right now, which, by the way, Mel, part of me thinks, who cares? These guys are 21 years old. If you expect these players to come in and be fully formed, then again, you've got the exercise, I think, confused. But because of the innate pressure involved with these GMs and head coaches and decision makers, some of them are going to opt for a player who is ready-made. You can count on him at this very moment. It's why a player like Amarius Mims might not go as high as his talent suggests because of the inconsistency, the injury history, and just the relative lack of experience. But I think Suamataia has a real chance of being a top 45 pick.
And I'll say this, Field. I think he's one of those guys that you could say 3 to 4 years from now, why didn't he go higher? If the right offensive line coach, I'm going to pull a line from my good friend, one of the best evaluators in the business, Vinny Serrato, former general manager of the NFL, Super Bowl rings, built that team in 88, that last national title team at Notre Dame, right? Was Vinny Serrato. And Vinny always says, coach before your name for a reason. Here's a guy, coach him. And we know, you know, you list the names of great offensive line coaches in NFL history. I gave you that list of 7 or 8 about a month or two ago for you. Get the right offensive line coach with Kingsley Suamataia, and I think you can make him into a Pro Bowl caliber tackle in the NFL. Doesn't get to the right guy, then the results are different. You say that about a lot of players, but the offensive line, I would say, they would say if you're coaching in high school field, right? If I'm taking over a high school team, I want the best offensive line coach I can find. It's always the critical part of the equation is that that's why Bill Callahan, Brian Callahan's dad, Brian Callahan's the head coach. Who's the offensive line coach now? Followed him to Tennessee with the Titans. Bill Callahan, great offensive one, the best ever in the NFL, right? That's what Will Levis is saying. Thank you. Thank you. Because I can't get this body. I got killed at Kentucky. He couldn't block for me at Kentucky. I go to Tennessee. They can't block for me, right? Yeah. So now can we get we got an offensive line coach. We got to get guys who can protect Will. I just think an offensive line coach with Kingsley Suamataia will make or break what type of career he has.
Yeah, two things for him, just to round out my thoughts here, is that you and I know this now. Like sometimes I've had offensive line coaches and people in the NFL tell me that job one for us when we bring these kids aboard in some cases is untraining the bad habits they've developed, mm-hmm. because the college football game is so, so different. Mm-hmm. The NFL, I think, is maybe gravitating towards there. But in college football, I mean, there are offensive tackles, Mel, that haven't played in a three-point stance other than goal line situations or fourth and ones for like 3 years, right? So we got to teach, we got to untrain the bad habits and then teach them how we want things to look. And the other thing is, when you're that big and that athletic, like Suamataia is, sometimes you don't need to be as precise and have, you know, like you can just overwhelm players because you're just bigger and stronger than them. Well, at the NFL level, you're still going to be bigger and stronger than a lot of guys, but you got to have technique and discipline and body control, and you got to hit the strike zone accurately. Those mm-hmm. are the kind of things that players with this kind of immense ability, if they take that and multiply that by excellent discipline, then we're talking about a high-level starter at right or left tackle for Suamataia. So he's an intriguing guy for sure. Yeah. Anybody else that came to mind here?
I'm good. I mean, I can say, Field, I think what we're doing now is we're anxiously awaiting Field Yates's Mock 2.0, which is coming up next week. I know you're getting all your calls in, all your GMs. I'm getting mocked on the McAfee show. I don't like Pat thinks I call GMs and personnel people. I do, and that's what I do. And all I say to Pat, to McAfee, is when you need me, if you need Field Yates on Mock 2.0, get Field scheduled before whatever day is coming on, because Field's day is going to be packed from 6 a.m. until 10 p.m. Eastern time. Okay. What day is it, Field, next week you're coming out with your Mock 2.0?
It's Wednesday. It's next Wednesday. So that's
Wednesday.
April 3rd.
Next Wednesday. Yeah. What's it, April what?
April 3rd.
Okay, past April Fool's Day. You don't want to come out with a mock draft on April Fool's Day. I've done that before, Field. I've done it before. It doesn't work well, okay? Everybody's fool, right? Everybody plays a fool, right? Bottom line is April 3rd. I want to send this to Pat McAfee. Call Field today. Lock him into a time. Do not wait until Wednesday, April 3rd, to decide at 11:45, I'm going to check with Field and try to get him on my show. Because the answer is probably going to be, I just don't have any time. I can't change things. They're set. So get up to the mode of operation at ESPN, Pat, and get everybody locked in the day before their mock comes out. Just a word of wisdom from a 41-year veteran, okay?
I love it right there. Great, great insight there for Pat McAfee, which, of course, if Pat and the gang want to have me on the show next week on Wednesday, I am available because—
They better. They better.
Now, you got a two-round mock draft. I guarantee you people are going to have some interesting thoughts on picks that they may not necessarily agree
with. This is a two-rounder?
Two-rounder next week.
Oh, I didn't expect that. You said so next Wednesday is a two-round mock.
Two-rounder. And Mel, what I have done is I've scribbled down player names and teams. I've already done that, Mel. I've done that. So I have an idea of who they're going to take. The problem with doing that, Mel, is one very specific thing. The second that you decide to shake up one of your picks, like if you go and change pick 26, you got to redo 27 through 64, right? So mock drafts, let me tell you this. A lot of fun to do when the stakes are low. When the stakes are a little higher, because you got to spend all day on national TV talking about it, Mel, a little more stressful than it was back in the day when I was a 14-year-old projecting, you know, which running back might go in the second round of the New Orleans Saints or something way back in the day. Heck, when I was 14 years old, running backs were going in the top five. So, man, times have changed.
I'll tell you an interesting story, Field, on that. Yeah, you know, everybody's handicapping games, right? College, NFL, right? And we come with the point spread picks. Everybody picks winners, right? Everybody picks winners until you monitor their picks. I'm big into writing everything down. Hey, I'll tell you what. Joe Fortenball with his pumpkin pie pick, 15-6 this year with us. 15-6, Joe Fortenball. Pumpkin pie pick. Finau won this past week again, okay? He had Gonzaga as his pumpkin pie pick over Kansas. Great pick, yeah, okay? But the bottom line is, as soon as you do, like you talk about mock drafts, as soon as you tell people, okay, I want you to call in to the Darian and Mel show, and you're going to give me three best bets in college, three best bets in the NFL, and I'll monitor them throughout. That's when you talk about pressure, Field. That's pressure, because guess what? You might have 10, 12 games you like on a Saturday, right? And you always go to, at the end of the day, I had a pretty good day, because you've always find three winners out of the 10 or 12, right? But if you had to lock into three, that's where it gets down to drafting. When you get into the NFL draft, we can say, this is what makes furious, Field. When we all sit back, well, you know, I liked him. I didn't like him. Who cares? It doesn't matter. But when you are sitting there on draft day, you got 7, 8, 9 picks at total, right? Seven round draft. Let's give them seven, one per round. You can't pick 50 guys. you're going to, and you got to make a decision between two, three, four guys. You know, you better pick the right one. Okay. Yeah. So for me, that's why drafting, it's an art. It's there's no easy way. There's no exact formula. You know, so to me, you can have success. A personnel guy can have success with one team, go to another team, and it doesn't work. Right. So again, that's what makes the draft so fascinating each and every year. And they're like snowflakes. Every year, the draft is different.
4 weeks away from tonight, we have the 2024 NFL draft. We cannot wait. He is Mel Kiper Jr. I am Bill Gates, and we are back on Monday.
We gotta get Mad Mel on this show. We gotta get Mad Mel on this show.
I think we can do that. I think we can do that. I think we can pull that string to get Mad Mel on the show. The two
forget McAfee. I want Mad Mel. Okay.
We can go crosstalk for an hour between the two of you, real Mel and Mad Mel. All right, Mel, always a blast. We'll do it again on Monday. Until then, have a great weekend. A reminder, Mach 2.0, Wednesday, April 3rd. Already here.